remember where we are. We have been starting from the water wave problem, the general equations, and from the original problem, in various asymptotic limits, find asymptotic equations. So these asymptotic equations have the purpose of being simpler. However, you limit yourself to certain situation, asymptotic equations. So I have, just to remind you where we are, we were in this chapter 2, which was the derivation of this fundamental equation from the water wave problem. And what did we do? We did a shallow water limit. Yeah. We have done the shallow water limit. And we obtain a system of hyperbolic equations, nonlinear conservation laws. The number one was just to rewrite the water wave problem in appropriate change of variables. And now we are here. We are going to do the long wave small amplitude limit. So here we are. Now, for those of you who are doing the problem set, I was a little bit too ambitious last week by thinking that we would do this long wave small amplitude limit and KdV derivation. We have not done it last week, so since you have to do it in 3D and you need a 2D model, so we should postpone it for a week, right? All right. So this is where we are. Now, I need to rewrite the long wave small amplitude limit. And so we're going to derive the Boussinesq and KdV equation. Okay, so let me rewrite the original equation, the water wave problem in the coordinates that are convenient for us. So you have this in your notes. I just rewrite it for me. So this is a Laplace equation. Phi is the potential. So we write the Laplace equation in the domain x is in R and z between 0. We made the change of variable to be in this domain. Cz, this is a derivative of phi. This is a Neumann boundary condition at the bottom, right? We're in two dimensions. Now this is x and z. This is the bottom. This is the water. And now ht equal. These are the two equations on the interface. And ht. So you have these equations. Plus 1/2 alpha over delta square phi z square equals 0. And this has to be taken at z equals 1 plus alpha h of x and z. So the interface between the air and the water is z equal 1 plus alpha h of x t. So I remind you that delta, the coefficient delta is non-dimensional. It has no dimension. It measures the relative depth compared to the horizontal wavelength. And alpha measures the relative amplitude of this wave compared to the depth. All right, so these are the two parameters that describe the problem. Now, we're going to be to find these equations as asymptotic limits. For those of you who have been, you know, following my course and going to the Wednesday afternoon seminar, you have seen this derivation already twice. So you have seen it through the Hamiltonian formulation when Walter Gregg presented it. You have seen it through the Lagrangian formulation when Doug Wright presented this derivation. So this is another one which is much closer to that of Doug, because Doug was doing essentially this, except that he was working in Lagrangian coordinates. So it's another way to do the same thing, to derive from the original problem this asymptotic equation. Okay. So we are working in the limit delta small, alpha small, and they are both small, but not independently small. Delta square equals alpha, and it will be the parameter h. We will call it h. A, yes, A is a typical way to measure the amplitude. All right. And the starting point was indeed to write an expansion, a Taylor expansion of the velocity of the x, z, t by noticing that since delta is small, phi in the z direction varies much slower than in the x direction. So we wrote the expansion. I'm just going to copy what we said. Expansion near z equals 0. So I write the formula we have derived last week. And I will write only the terms that are necessary. For derivatives in xt, this is the only thing we need. And we have to replace this expansion into these two equations. This is what we did for the shallow water. But in the shallow water limit, I remind you that delta was small, small depth, but alpha was of order 1. But now alpha has to be kept in the picture. All right. So you replace this formula into, I'm going to give them numbers. Maybe this was 3 prime and 4 prime. And in 3 prime, in 3 prime, we get ht. Yes? Yes, 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 thank you. Delta 4. Plus alpha hx. And so phi x, what is phi x? Well, you get it from here. It's fx minus, you get it from here and you differentiate respect to x. And take the result at z on the intercept. x and plus minus, minus 1 over delta square. Z again, you come here, you differentiate respect to Z, and you replace. So this plus one. I don't know if I need all these terms. Don't remind. I don't remember. Yes, I need all these terms. So I think I'm writing more than I need. Since I have started, I will just finish that form. And four derivatives equals zero. But alpha is small, so I have written a little bit too much. So I go, let me write this again, ht. So plus what? If I take the terms in order, the next term is this one, minus fx plus fx fxx plus, and now I'm going to take the terms in epsilon in order alpha or in order delta square, and no more than that. And I have two terms. I have h fx x, which represent this one, plus which one? The other one. Yeah. Thank you. And the other one, minus 1/6. Did I forget something? F and for the other. And the other one, so in 4 prime, it gives, so I come here, f, so I write this ft plus h. Now, phi t, we have to differentiate with respect to t, so we have ft, but we have another term here in delta square. To write. Is it me that makes this sound? Plus epsilon over 2, plus epsilon over 2. So I differentiate with respect to t. I have xt. And where is it? And this one, phxx, which is fx squared. Okay, so these are the two equations. And we're going to manipulate them to essentially to reduce to only one equation. But often this coupled system for H and S that can be rewritten in form of a second order, in form of a wave equation, is often called the Boussinesq system. Sometimes it's convenient to differentiate a second time with respect to t to eliminate. If you want to eliminate h, or if you want to eliminate f, you can play around with these two equations. So one way to, if you differentiate with respect to t, you obtain and replace in the above equation, you replace, you get, well, I don't know if it's really useful, but you may have, you may sometimes see the Boussinesq equation in this form. So I write it down, I change the sign. Okay. So you replace this one into that one. And you obtain a lot of terms. So I leave it to you to check. It's just a substitution. This is referred to as a Boussinesq equation. This is a Boussinesq system, this is a Boussinesq equation, the same thing. Alright? So now from here, we will get to the KDV limit, which is the most interesting. And to get the KDV limit from the Boussinesq equation, the idea is to decide to follow the wave in a certain direction. So to consider wave moving, for example, to the right or to the left, which means that we're going to introduce, you see here is the wave equation. So we're going to introduce a new parameter xi, which is x minus t. So this means that we have a moving frame. Or in other terms, we restrict ourselves to waves that move to the right. And at the same time, if you make this change of variable, you see that the appropriate time, we'll do it in a minute, the appropriate time is to consider slower time. Okay, tau is a slow time. You need capital T to be very large to have tau of order 1. And if you make this two change of variable, this change of variable, it means that from xt you go to xt tau, and then it becomes f of xt becomes, for example, psi of xi tau. Okay, so ft, very simple calculation, ft becomes minus 6 psi plus epsilon psi tau, fx becomes f psi, and we need a second derivative. So when you differentiate, what you get minus 6xx, xxi. Now this is just calculation. Okay. And the resulting the Boussinesq equation now takes the form. Move that away. We get an epsilon that we will get rid of, minus 2 xi xi t. One third, four derivatives. Okay. One third of four derivatives. Minus 3, 6C, all that, plus order of epsilon squared equals 0. And now it's convenient to go back to the velocity. So I remind you, C is the velocity potential, so F is the velocity potential. This psi is the velocity potential. We differentiate once to get back to the velocity. And this psi satisfies now, this U satisfies UT. So for those of you who have seen this equation many times, who have done a lot of mathematics on it, it's nice to see how it comes from for once. And this is a the KDG equation. Right? Now, as you know, there has been a lot of work of KDG equations of all kinds. Now, sometimes you, by change of variable, you like to see it as with the parameters with a 6 here. Is it a 6? Now, we see here that the velocity, the velocity of the interface satisfies the KdV equation. But it's also true for the amplitude. Do you remember the picture? Here we have. One of the purposes of all these asymptotics is to have a simple equation that describes the movement of the interface, because this is essentially the most interesting part of the picture, is how the interface moves. So not only that the velocity of the interface satisfies the KdV equation, but also, if you remember what is h, h was measuring the interface. And if you go back here, you see that h behaves like ft. It's like minus ft. Right? And what is ft? Go back here. At lowest order, ft is minus. So this is 16. So u, psi, the derivative of t respect to xi measures not only the velocity but also the elevation of the interface. So h satisfies the Boussinesq equation also. Okay. So this is the derivation of KdV. And as you've seen in the problem, yes? Because there are several ways to rewrite it. It's not a unique way to write it. This is a potential everywhere.
But F is at today's equal to zero.
Yes.
Water level. In water formulation is
on the free surface. It is true. It's a little bit different. We would have to check. There is also the fact that often you can replace a derivative respect to t by a derivative. You can for example, notice that fxx is like ftt plus O of epsilon. Sometimes you play with this derivative and you don't get always the same equation. All right, so this is essentially the end of this long wave small amplitude derivation. The equivalent of these derivations for shallow water and Boussinesq KdV in 3D is the object of your problem set. So we try to do it. And while the water wave, the shallow water is almost the copy of what we had done in 2D, the KdV leads to what's called Kp equation, Kadomsev-Petersilly, and you have to make the clever choice of scaling in. So you have x, which will be the role of plate here, and you have y. You have to make the clever choice of for y to be able to reproduce this calculation. So I leave it to you to play alone. And if you have problems, we'll discuss. So the last section 5 will be the 3D case, 3D-dimensional case, and we leave it to you. Right, so if you don't have questions, we move ahead. We almost finished our first part, which was the question of this canonical equation. The last one we have not done is nonlinear Schrodinger equation. This is what we will do now. So this is where we are. Okay, so we're moving to chapter 3. Chapter 3. So we will deal with weakly nonlinear waves. And the purpose will be the derivation of the nonlinear Schrodinger equation. Unfortunately, it will not be as direct from the water wave problem as we have done for the other two limits. But we'll explain that slowly. It will be in the same spirit, but technically it's heavier. So let me try to give you the content so we know where we are. So we'll do the introduction to compare this limit to what we have done at present. And in particular, we will try to understand when does the regular perturbation analysis fail. So I will explain that. Second, we will introduce the method of multiple scale. On a simple example. Which will be the Klein-Gordon equation. And third, we will take a general nonlinear wave equation, nonlinear dispersive wave, And we will derive the derive the nonlinear Schrodinger equation in this limit of weakly nonlinear waves. So we'll do it for a general equation of the type a linear operator, which depends on derivative respect to t, respect to x. this linear operator, we will suppose that it's a dispersive operator, non-linear wave, it will be a linear dispersive wave operator, plus a non-linear term. So we'll start with a very general equation, where the only hypothesis is that the linear part is indeed dispersive. And from there, we will derive the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. And so you will tell me, where is the water wave problem here? Well, the water wave problem is a problem of this type, although it's not so easy to see it directly, immediately. But we have checked, if you remember, one of the first things we did on the water wave problem was the linearization near flat water. And when we did the linearization, we obtained a dispersive operator. So this is the linear part of the water wave problem. This is a non-linear. The difficulty is that, of course, it's written in a complicated form. If one wants to do this, the non-linear Schrödinger derivation from the water wave problem, has to work a little bit on the original problem. And in fact, it was not done that long ago, when Boussinesq KdV was last century, only 2 centuries ago, last 19th century, that the non-linear Schrödinger was done by Sakharov in the derivation of non-linear Schrödinger equation from the water wave problem in the limit of weakly non-linear wave was done by Sakharov in 68 for deep water means that the bottom is at infinity, so H was infinity. And it was done later by Philip, give me the name. Azimoto Ono, thank you. In 72 for not deep water, for arbitrary depth. And these papers are not easy to read. Okay. So this is why we cannot do this derivation directly from the water wave problem. We have to understand first the main ideas on simple context. Here, we start. So the asymptotic limit that we are interested in now is the case where we have a small amplitude so wave of small amplitude but we make no hypothesis, so essentially alpha is small in this picture here. But we make no assumption about the size of delta, the relative depth. Okay. And essentially, we deal with small amplitudes at the first approximation. You replace your original problem by the linearized problem. Near water at rest. So if you remember what we have obtained some time ago, last week or so, we obtain that eta of x and t. So essentially, you neglect all nonlinear effects. We obtain that eta of x and t. Eta was in the original variable. Was a constant, exponential i kx minus omega t. I write it in 2D. plus complex conjugate. And K and omega are related by the dispersion relation. Omega square of K equals GH DK tanh H. And we derived it, in fact, in 3D. Now I just write it in 3D. So as you see, these waves are dispersive. If you remember the definition of dispersive, omega prime of K different from constant. These waves are dispersive. And here, in this very simple approximation, A is a constant. And the purpose of this analysis is to suppose that although to try to take into account the non-linear terms, which are small, but we want an approximation that is a bit more precise than this very crude linear approximation. And to understand what we're going to do and what is the limitation of just doing a regular perturbation that I will do with you immediately, I'm going to take a very simple example. And so my example will be the Klein-Gordon equation. So suppose that you want to solve this equation. This is the Klein-Gordon equation. This is a non-linear Klein-Gordon. This is Klein-Gordon equation. And the non-linear U3 is, so the non-linear term is U cube. So imagine you have an initial value problem. We start with an initial condition that is small. That's of order epsilon. Well, as long as it remains small, this is a linear approximation, and when the nonlinear terms become important, then we will take into account. So this is the example. And what we will see, I give you the answer so you know where we're going, we will see that instead of having a wave, well, that is the solution that is a periodic solution like this, we will see that it is replaced by an oscillatory solution, but which is replaced, this oscillatory solution is replaced by what's called a wave packet. And one of the questions is to understand what is the evolution of the envelope equation. And what we will obtain is that this envelope equation, so this is something that varies on larger scale, this envelope equation will be the nonlinear four-digit equation. So essentially, we will approximate the solution by a sinusoidal wave, a monochromatic wave, but the amplitude, instead of being constant, will be replaced by something that varies slowly. In x and t. And how does this vary? Well, in a non-trivial way, satisfying the nonlinear Schrodinger equation. So we write that in the paper. Okay, so this is where we plan to go. But before we do this, let's try the most simple thing. Suppose that we want to solve this equation. We suppose that U is small. In a very nice way, we perform a regular perturbation analysis, expansion. Well, what does that mean? It means that we're going to look for a solution U of x and t epsilon. So epsilon, u is small, so I start with an epsilon. U0 of xt plus epsilon u1 and a priori we should be able to compute all terms. Now the what we require for this expansion to be valid is that at each x and t that we consider, u1 is bounded. Right? So u1 is bounded, u2 is bounded, in norms that you can define, but you don't want suddenly a term being of the same order as the one that is preceding it. So we want to see. Okay, so the second term should be of order epsilon. This should be of epsilon squared. They should not. It should be an ordered perturbation expansion. Just to have a so that this expansion means is acceptable. Okay, so we look for some for a solution like this, and we're going to replace into the Klein-Gordon equation. So what U0 satisfy? Well, I mean you can see it in various ways, but U0 will satisfy the linear problem. Is the lowest order, and if so, u0 of xt. Well, we can find it in the form of a sinusoidal wave multiplied by a constant, okay, plus its complex conjugate, since we're interested in a solution, real solution. So if you look for a solution like this, you replace into the equation, you obtain that omega square must be equal to k square plus 1. This is a dispersion relation. Okay? You agree? Now, the next order. Next order. The next order is O of epsilon square.
This is the equation for U1.
So dt U1 minus so U, yeah, dt U1 dt t U1 minus dxx U1 plus U1.
And since the nonlinear term here is of order 3, we still have 0. We have not yet in. We have 0. Okay. Doesn't, for the moment, it does not appear. It will appear at the next stage.
So U1, again, is solution of the linear problem. You can take it as the same sinusoidal wave plus multiplied by a constant, but since we have already one, it's just the same as taking u1 equals 0. Things now. We still do not consider the nonlinear. So let's go to the next order. O of epsilon cube, and now it becomes a little bit more interesting. So u2 plus, so this is the equation for u2.
As usual, the linear part on the left-hand side. And the nonlinear and what remains here,
tell me what remains.
So the term of epsilon cube,
which is u0 cube. Okay.
Which is
a exponential I kx minus omega t plus a star exponential minus I kx minus omega t cube. which when I develop, I get a cube 3i kx minus omega t plus 3 times a square a plus the complex conjugate of each of these two terms. So here we are with a linear Klein-Gordon equation, inhomogeneous, the right-hand side is given. Right? And to solve it, well, you're going to look for particular solution of the Klein-Gordon equation when the right-hand side is only one term, and when the right-hand side is the other term, and they're complex conjugate. So let me take the case where I want to solve the equation taking the second term. Okay. So what can you say about that? You say that this function on the right-hand side belongs to the kernel of the adjoint, but the adjoint is the same, it's a self-adjoint operator. So exponential I kx minus omega t is a solution of the left-hand side. So in that case, what do you do? Well, you have to look for a solution in the form of Platin ODEs multiplied by a function of x and t. Yes? Well, I'm sorry, I should have said it a little bit more clearly. Let's forget about the water wave problem. I'm working with a simpler problem, which is completely independent at this moment. Just a Klein-Gordon equation.
So why do you assume
U1? Well, if you want, I can write U1. Yeah, you're right. I can write this and add this. Well, you know, ultimately what I'm interested in is U, so U0 plus epsilon U1 plus epsilon. So U is A, exponential, U1 is epsilon B, so this gives A plus epsilon B exponential I kx minus omega. Since I have not said what is A, my new A is this. Okay? So just as if you take it here, it's the same way to say. Right? Okay. So, you look for a solution of this type, you replace into here, and what you get for S must satisfy this, what are the coefficients? This is elementary, but the conclusion is, the calculation is elementary, conclusion is important. Equal 3 a square n. And what are the solutions of this equation? One particular solution, if you take f of x t in the form of linear function, this makes it. If you choose a and b the way to compensate, this is a constant. Right? So I'm just calculating one part of the solution U2. And one part of the solution U2 is of the form, so I don't want to calculate everything, but this one that I have just calculated is of the form AX plus BT exponential IKX minus omega. And plus other terms. Well, when you put this back into the expansion here, well, you get u of x t equals epsilon u0, so a exponential I k u. Doesn't matter. Right?
Plus complex conjugate. Don't write everything.
Okay, I'll write it. Plus this one, epsilon squared ax plus bt exponential akx minus omega t plus other terms.
And you see that this expansion makes sense only when x or t
are much smaller than 1 over epsilon squared.
Because if when they start to become of the same of order 1 over epsilon squared, this term becomes of order 1, and it is not small compared to the previous term. So the expansion has no valid anymore. So linear perturbation calculation like this is okay as long as you are not interested in the evolution of the solution for very large time, for very long time, or very large distances. Okay. Now this is a very classical problem, and the way to eliminate these secular terms or to treat these secular terms, or a way to find an approximation of the solution here for long time or long distances is dealt by the method of multiple scaling. And this is just an extension of the classical method of multiple scale that you may have seen in ordinary differential equations. For example, if you want to solve the problem in ODE, the non-linear oscillator, well, this is exactly the method of multiple scale that one uses. For those who are not familiar with this method in ODE, it is studied in many books. One of them is Bender Orsag Perturbation Theory and Asymptotic Analysis, which was an old book in the 60s, but it has a new edition, 1999. Okay. So the morality of this example is that if you're interested in long time or large distances, approximate your solution by the linear wave and do a simple perturbation analysis is not sufficient. You have to use the method of multiple scale. And this is what we're going to do now. So what does that mean? We're going to make some assumption. We're going to make the assumption that so the purpose is still to solve this equation, or more precisely to find a formula for the solution when epsilon is small. So the assumption is that we're going to suppose that u depends not only on the usual independent variable x and t, but also on slower variables. Okay.
And these lower variables will be x, epsilon x, t. So this has nothing to do with the capital letters when we did with the water vapor, right? This is just for this particular example. And we will see that it is not enough, in fact, to use only epsilon, x epsilon t. You need another variable, and you can choose whether you can choose either epsilon square t or epsilon square x. And if you are not really satisfied with this choice because you think that I am anticipating too fast, you may say, well, I forget about this additional variable. I consider only these two slow variables. And later, when you perform the calculation, you realize that you need to work with a higher order for another time. So it looks like it seems to be a little bit unnatural. It is easier to present with these three variables, but it is not necessary to implement it immediately. Right?
So why do we say that slow variable? Because if you want to have x or capital T of order 1, it means that the small x or small t are very large. So they vary slowly compared to the fast variable small x small.
Okay? And this is a hypothesis. We're going to suppose that essentially u depends on all these variables and are independent. So we have 5 independent variables. So now we still look for u in the form of u equals epsilon u0 plus epsilon u1 plus epsilon 2 u2. This is still our goal to write an expansion for the subset. But we will suppose this assumption.
So we will do exactly what we have done here. We place this big formula into the original equation. But we will have to remember that when we see dt u, it means differentiate respect to t. In fact, since now u depends not only on t but the other time, we will have to replace it by the partial u plus epsilon v dt.
Yeah, well, I put u, but it's not necessarily u.
On any function that it applies on. So each time we see a derivative respect to t, in fact, we will have to replace it with a derivative respect to the fast variable plus slower terms.
And the same for x and
as we see here, we need to take also the second derivative. So here we have v2 dt square plus 2 epsilon dt dt. When we have two derivatives in x, it becomes d2 dx squared epsilon squared do this substitution. So the linear operator is this one. So it becomes, so I write the equation like this. So it becomes, I replace and I order the term, it's a little bit heavy, but it's L0. I'm going to to explain in a minute. Okay, so what is L0? Well, L0 is when you take terms that do not depend on, do not have factor epsilon. So we're going back and forth to the figure. It's the same equation, but it's the way it is. It has to be like this. So let's have a C. Plus. Right, so we stop at epsilon square. So we have to write L0 plus L1 plus epsilon L1 plus epsilon 2 L2 plus etc. applied to epsilon U0 plus epsilon U1 plus etc. Can I get rid of the epsilon here? Equal epsilon cube U0 plus epsilon U1 plus epsilon 2 U2, etc. Cube. That's why I have 2. This is what we're going to write, and this gives us the hierarchy of equations that we were going to solve. Equation L0 U0 equals 0. Well, the same equation over and over again. Come get out of that one. And what does it tell us? Well, it tells us that U0 is a solution of the form A chi x minus omega t plus its complex conjugate multiplied by a constant. Remember the constant, right? But now this constant is not a constant. This constant depends on the three variables that play the role of parameters. That's the difference. And again, omega and k are related by omega squared equals k squared plus 1. Omega. Omega of k square. Okay. Now the second equation is L0 of U1 equals, okay, so I'm taking the terms of order epsilon, S0 of U1, S0 of U1, yes, equals minus L1 of U0. And that's all for this, at this level. Okay. What is L1? Well, where is it L1? L1 was here. So minus. There's a 2 and I have to apply that to U0. U0 is A of this slow variable exponential I kx minus omega t plus its complex conjugate. Alright, so what is it? When I differentiate with respect to T, I get minus I omega, and when I get differentiate with respect to big T, I get A. So this gives me 2i omega dA dt plus K d and again, I always have the complex conjugate next to it. All right, so we have this equation to solve. We have L0 U1, so L0 is our usual Klein-Gordon operator, dt2 minus U1 minus d2x squared U1 plus U1. This is an operator in the small variable, in the fast variable, xt equals something which is a constant in these variables, right, depends on t, big capital X, capital T, play role of parameters. So this is a constant, exponential ik omega t. Now we exact in the situation that we've seen before, the right-hand side belongs to the kernel of the adjoint of the left-hand side of the linearized operator. So we are exactly in a situation where this term will lead to circular terms, to terms that increase with x and t. We don't want these terms because we want a regular perturbation which is well-defined. So we're going to decide that since this big capital A is unknown at this moment, we're going to decide that we'll choose A, such that in this large, in this slow variable, it satisfies that this parenthesis is zero. We eliminate the secular term. What does this tell us? It tells us that A satisfies a transport equation in this variable capital T capital X. Tau remains a parameter. We don't talk about it at this level because it goes into further terms. Yeah.
we obtain that dA dt equals k over omega plus k over omega dA dx
okay. How do we solve this equation?
This is an equation of the form ut plus cux equals zero.
Transport equation.
Well, it does not tell us exactly what is A, but it tells us that A is in fact the function of not a function of x capital T and tau independently, but in fact, it's a little bit more, T does not play a role, tau doesn't play a role, so I leave it away. It's a function of x minus ct, So if you remember that omega of k, omega square is k square plus 1, then omega prime different with respect to k is 2k, right? So k over omega is exactly omega prime.
So this tells us only that A, the amplitude, moves at the group A
moves with velocity omega prime of k, which is often called group velocity.
So A is just transported. At this level, we have not found yet what is this amplitude A. We have obtained only that A is now a function of psi and tau. And psi is x minus omega prime of k. Okay. And tomorrow, since we're going to stop here, tomorrow we will go to the third order. I'm just going to write the equation so we just take it exactly from there. Tomorrow, we will write the equation at the order epsilon cubed. Epsilon 4, the next order. Epsilon cubed, epsilon 4. Or the next one. And we will have the equation L0 of U2 equals everything that is on the other side. So minus L1 U1 minus L0 L2. So again, we have a Klein-Gordon equation with inhomogeneous right-hand side. And we will have to eliminate. Oh, yeah. Where is it? Oh, yes. Finally, the nonlinear terms come up. We will
write that this right-hand side, all the secular terms in the right-hand side that may lead to increase of the solution, must disappear. Okay. And this probability condition will give us the nonlinear Schrodinger equation. So this is at the next, this is for tomorrow. We all remember where we are. We just start from there.